I'm going to say that inertia is the biggest enemy and friend of the human race. And I shall show why that is so. Ladies who are queens of inertia and gentlemen who are kings of inertia will appreciate the value of it when they recognize that their very existence depends upon it. Because apart from inertia, there is only initiative. I'm going to do a diagram first, a very familiar one, so that somebody will say, you're always drawing the same diagram. Perhaps Gerhard would like to say it for me. Wouldn't you say that, Gerhard?
In what
book? You're always drawing the same diagram.
Why can't
you say that? To please me. So few people.
The same diagram.
Thank you. Only occasionally somebody pleases me. But very often I have to drag it out of them like that, you see. And it's a very feminine thing, dragging pleasures out of people. We usually start by saying, let the paper represent an infinite continuum. You remember the thing we do with it? We take a sheet of paper, and we say, imagine that instead of being finite, simple rectangle of paper like this, it's extended infinitely in all directions. So we have an infinite sheet of paper, and then imagine further that we have an infinite number of sheets of paper, one on top of the other, so that it is a continuum of paper in three dimensions, instead of apparently in two like the sheet is. Now, when I wave the paper like this, the ripples produced by doing this action would, apart from making a noise, which might be on the recording, be very difficult to visualize. So it's much better if I draw them and ask you to cooperate with me by remembering what the drawing represents. So first of all, I'll draw it quite small down here. This is the piece of paper waving. Hello, Jeffrey. This is the drawing of the paper waving, producing diagrammatically a sine wave like that, the flat piece of paper and the wavy piece of paper. And I want you to imagine that any line I draw is not static, it is an actual movement of energy. We'll define energy in a moment in a slightly more full way than we did before. When I want to draw a line, I take this object, which is, I hope, sufficiently full of ink, and push it over the surface of the paper, and it leaves a mark of its track, rather like an electron would leave a track across a photographic plate of the appropriate kind. So that any line that you see, I want you to imagine not that it's static, but that line is continuously drawing itself. And in exactly the same way, if I put a dot there, I want you to imagine it is not static, but a force is positing the dot. And that the moment the dot is positive, it immediately, I remove the pen, vanishes. Now this one doesn't vanish because it's made of ink. It stays on the paper. But I want you to imagine that within the field of power which this paper represents, that the dot exists when the power contracts onto a center, and the moment that the power lets go of the place where the dot is, the doubt vanishes. And therefore, the universe is actually dotting. It's doing this with itself, making little dots all over, vibrating. Incidentally, that is the Hindu diagram for the sonoriferous ether, the fifth essence, the quintessence, which is sound. Sound is made by moments of contraction and expansion, and the sound field is full of little dots. So that would be the Hindu diagram, a circle dotted for the sound-bearing medium. It is called Akasha. Akasha means the unlocked. The Kasha is like a case, and the A in front is privative. So you have to imagine that the paper is a field of power that it presses on itself and makes little dots. But every time it doesn't press, the dot vanishes. Whereas in this diagram, the dot doesn't vanish because it's made of ink. So, anything I draw is to be interpreted as a motion of the paper, and the motion of the paper is to be interpreted as a motion within an infinite field, three-dimensional, and that this power, this field of power, by self-contraction, creates those little dots. Now, it is a peculiar thing that when you do a lot of dots, the human consciousness tries to tie them together. If I go like that, and you look, you will tend to go from one dot to the other, and then go round, and you will structure a triangle. So that really the passage of consciousness ties together the dots, which are really compressed energies. I'm going to give you a term which maybe a physicist might recognize, an egg. What's an egg, John?
Well, it used to be a unit of energy.
Used to be a unit of energy. We'll allow it to be a unit of energy. And we'll put on the end of it. Is that Latin for something? Yes. And then we'll put an N. We've now got a nice word, an ergon. And we're going to say that an ergon is a unit of energy at work. Egg is the work. The on, serpent with tail in mouth, is the power that is producing the work. The ergon, we will say, is the least amount of energy capable of producing a zone of a rotating force. So instead of talking about atoms or protons or neutrons or quarks or leptons or whatever, we're going to say there's something much finer than those, and that finer is an ergon, a primordial amount of energy, an energy quantum, and it is sentient. It feels itself at work, and it feels the manner in which it works. So now we're going to say the whole universe is nothing but a fantastic quantity of ergons, and the ergons are psychic as well as physical forces. They're psychosomatic, primordial energies, feeling themselves, initiating their own activities. Now, if I had time, I could dot the whole paper. Because when we consider that the paper symbolizes a plane through the continuum of sentient power, then we have to say, by the nature of a continuum which has no parts, if there is a quality anywhere, whatever, in that continuum, then that quality must be reproducible in any other part of the continuum. The qualities in a continuum, because it is not made of parts, are throughout identical. So if by self-contraction the continuum can pinch itself and make a dot there, it can pinch itself and make a dot there. Therefore, within this field of sentient power, self-feeling power, there are an infinity of little points, all posited by the continuum itself. Now the continuum is infinite, and it posits finite points, but the points are only intentions of the infinite. So a finite point is an intention, spell the tension with a T psychologically and an S physically, an intention. An intention psychologically to make physically a tension. So every ergon can be represented by a little dot. Now the infinite field has an infinite number of ergons in it, and every one of them is a little entity in its own right, called own right because it is owed to the infinite continuum, but being posited by the infinite continuum is absolutely valid to be there. Every time the infinite makes a point, the point has infinite justification in being there because infinity has posited that point. That's the first thing. So cover the paper with dots and then pile the papers one on top of each other to infinity. We then have a three-dimensional field full of dots. I will draw a Masonic ashlar like that and then put it full of dots. Now imagine that cube extended to infinity and the dots extended within it to fill it. We have a three-dimensional dotty field, and every little dot, every little dot is psychosomatic. It knows itself, it feels itself, it operates itself. When Jesus says, not one jot shall vanish till all be fulfilled, he means not a single one of those dots in the infinite shall disappear until the infinite purpose of the field that precipitated those dots shall have fulfilled itself. We can read patterns, as in a Rorschach test, as in an ink blot test, where you look at an ink blot and you see figures into it. You see them by your intention to feel hope and fear. You project your hopes and your fears into that three-dimensional continuum. Now let's look what happens if we see, if we capture any zone. We will capture it simply by lassoing it, by letting it spin. And we will use a number 6 to do it. I want you to imagine the tail of this 6 is in the infinite. It is coming down from infinity and winding round like this and tying itself in that way. But it has tied a fantastical number of little dots in this way, so that it has actually captured a very large number of ergons, that is, of little power packets, each of which is a psychosomatic entity. It feels itself, it knows itself, and it initiates its own action. It can do anything that it wills, although it has been captured. The word concept is made from a word meaning to capture and hold together. To conceptualize is to seize from the infinite possibilities, some of them, and then define them within the encapsulated zone. But when you capture a zone, the zone that you capture is not passive. It is not inactive. It is made of energy, of will, of ideation, and aesthetic self-evaluation. It is a feeler, a thinker, and a willer. The tiniest little particle, the tiniest virus that infects you, is a little entity with think, feel, will as essential qualities. Now let's see what this means to a human being. A human being is such a thing that's come out of infinity and captured a certain zone full of little dots. Now, in the act of capturing them, just as the intelligence of a baby, seeing a fertilized ovum, catches the ovum that's been fertilized and determines to use it for its own purpose, yet in that very moment it has captured the totality of the inheritance of both parents. And then it has to deal with what it's captured. So you cannot say that you are your own possession. You cannot claim to be your own man, as they used to say in the days of knight errantry, unless you have subdued under your authority, by conscious control, all the little elements that you have captured in your being. When you breathe in, you bring from relatively extended space, for you relatively infinite, a certain amount of air. You draw it up your nostrils, take it in the lungs, and you spin it round. But do you breathe in nothing, or do you breathe in air? And is the air pure air, or is the air full of intentions? Is the air full of minute little viruses, perhaps bacteria? We know perfectly well that you can't take a breath of air from anywhere without that air having in it some elements of life. And right down to the fundamental, the aerogon, that primary particle which is psychosomatic, the little point which has a will of its own, a feeling of its own, and an ideation, a thinking of its own. And yet when you breathe it in, you have to deal with it. A couple of days ago, somebody gave me a little cake, and I ate the cake, and immediately I went spot appeared on my cheek. There had been a disagreement inside my organism. I ate the cake out of what is called politeness, and immediately the cells inside thought, well, he may be polite, but that doesn't mean we have to suffer. And it happened that it got up to there, by which time they had won their battle and threw it out on the surface. And I, having more or less been influenced by an Edwardian mother, put my thumb on it and pressed it very hard and said, back, go through the normal channels. This is not what you think it is. Because as far as they are concerned, any pore in your body is an anus if they want to get rid of something. Now, we have said and we have accepted that inertia means in work affirming. Let's cut the word. In, and the artisan form of erg, which is work, er, affirming work within. Inertia. Now the work, remember, is nothing but a self-encapsulating primordial particle at work in the gross material body, discriminating the life field. So we'll now define the erg a little more carefully. The E, which is the fifth letter in English, and the fifth letter also in the Hebrew, is a hay and means life itself, the life field of power. And the letter R, the Hebrew resh, means discriminating capacity, the capacity to see differences. The gimel, the haji, the Greek gamma, means consolidation, incarnation, or earth. So erg means life differentiating within the earth. The O is the zone or situation in which that process occurs. The N is the continuity of that same process. So when we're looking at an ergon, the primary unit of psychosomatic energy, we are saying that it is a serpent with tail in mouth, like that. And we are saying that it is the life field which, by its own discriminatory activity, has separated itself, has encapsulated the zone, and condensed itself into the form we call Earth, the G in geography, the gimel, the solidity, the condensation to the nth degree, incarnation. So the word erg, which is used in physics for a unit of work, also means that the unit of work is a consolidated, differentiated life field function. Now, wherever we go, whatever we do, we are doing it inside the field of sentient power, the life field itself, and we are not only acting upon the field, which is full of little ergons, little dusty psychosomatic units, but they are acting upon us. And if we eat some of them or breathe them in, there is a battle. Who is going to win? You breathe in a certain condition and you get a certain disease. If the enemy ergons, the bacteria, the viruses, if they win, you lose and you get a disease, a state of dis-ease. But if you win, they die. And it is impossible for any single individual to live except at the expense of the death of another being. In a recent debate between two very important political thinkers, it was agreed that the purpose of the next war will be quite simply a battle for the raw materials of the world, because a nation of millions of people cannot subsist, and especially not in an industrialized, commodity-producing society, without appropriating the raw materials of the earth. So if it doesn't get its raw materials, it will collapse. If we don't get the steel, we can't make the motor cars. If we don't get the rubber, we can't make the tires. In every way, there are raw materials needed, and all the major national governments know that they cannot keep their position as governments unless they get their hands on the raw materials. And they know that every other government in the world has the same intention. When you saw the flames of Abadan and the petrol going up, did you see the price going up at the same time? Did you see it flashing on the screen, going up and up and up? Well, if in their battle for control they destroyed all the oil, we'd have to run our motor cars on sugar beet or something like that. We'd have to find an alternative. So absolutely basic to the battle is the intake of raw materials. Now, the raw material of all reality fundamentally is power. When that power is at work, we call it energy, the affirmer of work. But when we look at the diagram, we see that no single individual human being who has captured the zone enclosed by his skin has a free capacity for telling the elements inside his body what to do without them trying to do something about it. How many times you make your mind up to do a certain thing and find you've forgotten it, or it doesn't seem so very important? Did it ever occur to you that the reason you forgot it was not because you've got a bad memory, But because some of these little ergons in here had another plan and blocked your very good memory. When you have a pipeline, it's a very good pipeline, but somebody doesn't want you to have it. So quite simply, they cut it. Does that mean that you forgot or that they attacked you? When the Iranian Air Force hit at one of the Iraqi pipelines, did it mean the pipeline was no good in design, or did it mean that the Iranians were going to try and put it out of order? We know perfectly well that in all international matters, there is a continuous fight, either by gross material attack, or by what they would today call conventional methods, or by diplomacy, twisting and talking people out of what they want and persuading them to do what you want. And this occurs at all levels internationally. And then when we look at the internal politics of a nation, it occurs nationally. And then when we look at a family trying to sort out who will inherit what, we find exactly the same thing within a single family unit. And if we look at inside the family, we find we could represent each individual member of the family as a dog, a psychosomatic entity with thought, feeling and will, and all of them unique, and all with the capacity for wanting their own way and working to try to get it. Now we all know that about family. But we tend not to recognize the same thing is true of the individual. The individual human being is not a simple unit. The individual human being is legion. He has captured the zone of ergons, of these primordial psychosomatic intelligences, and they have not liked being captured. Now, if we take a Muslim concept here, which is borrowed from the Old Testament, God, that is the infinite field of sentient power, made man to look through man at the universe. Made man for God, the universe for man to look at, so that the infinite God, having posited a man inside a universe, can come in, make the big universe, go in and make man, and then through man interfere with the universe. Now you all know the manual of power that goes like this. We will just draw that up. Have we got space? Do we need a new page? Will somebody tell me? Do we need a new page? Right. I'm going to draw this manual of power now. This one, very simply, I'm going to draw a nice thumb. Doesn't look like a thumb. One, two, three, four. Like that. And then these two, I'm going to bend them down. Like this. I'm going to cross those two off. And that leaves the manual of power. What the manual says, the thumb ruled by Venus, that's its symbol, by love, by that which it loves, it initiates. So the thumb means initiative power. And on the first finger we write Jupiter, and that means the governing concept of whole cosmos. And then, on the middle finger, I'm going to write Saturn. Saturn is the lord of time. Then we're going to look very carefully at this. Love posits a universe and presses through the universe to generate time. The statement here is, there is nothing in total reality that is not posited by an initiative act of will, So what is positive is the governing concept, and then the governing concept extended serially constitutes the time process. And these two fingers are held down because that one represents the sun, which means life force itself, pleasure, pain, and this one, Mercury, represents the raw materials of commerce. It is saying, by holding these two fingers down, the material situation and the pleasure, pain situation shall be subdued and made subject to the authority of the will that has posited the governing concept, that has posited serially the time process. And it's because of that that it is called the manual of power. Because if you meditate upon it and upon yourself, you will find that you have never done anything in the whole of your life without initiating the impulse to do so with some governing concept, something you have captured by your consciousness, and then proceeded to activate it serially and thus generate the time process. If you then remind yourself that whatever you are doing, whether you're being nice or nasty, you are in fact being willful fundamentally. Now that will has come out of this palm here, and it is embedded in the palm there. If you look at your thumb, it's embedded in the palm. Your fingers have three joints out of the palm, but the thumb has only two. The basic one in the thumb is bedded into the palm, and that means the overlooking consciousness, the spiritual monad of your being, the original enclosure which you made by coming from infinity and positing yourself in existence in the world, that is your primordial observation zone. You observe, you serve the orb of being, and then you posit inside that your five functions. Now, we've been asked to talk about inertia. Inertia means the amount of energy put into a thing which establishes that that thing exists. If you put only one unit of energy to make a thing, one little ergon, then you only need one little energy unit to knock it out. But if you put two in, you will need two to knock that two out. And if you put 3 million in, you will need 3 million to knock 3 million out. So the amount of energy, the number of energy quanta put into your being constitutes your mass inertia. Now imagine we've all got ancestors, and the ancestors have all been made of energy, and the energy has always been trine, threefold, thinking, feeling, willing energy, and the protoplasm that it has generated in order to live as a body on Earth is a perfect recording material. Then inside our physical body we have the total ancestral inertia of the race from which we are derived. So we can actually step backwards in time millions and millions of years, and we can keep moving until we come back to the original differentiating field of life power. But that original field of life power is full of little unit energies, each with its own purpose. So our lives are not simple. We think we are. We've been told we are by playing a trick on us. We have been taught as babies to say I and me and mine and define a situation. And when we define that situation, we have been taught to say that is my situation. I define it and I'm supposed to rule it, and I am responsible for it. But how many babies are taught that their protoplasm is riddled right through with ancestral impulses, that the baby will have to deal with, whether it's an hereditary factor of the shape of the nose or the colour of the eye or teeth shape or chin shape, whatever it is, the baby is already conditioned by its total ancestry. So the problem of inertia is a vast problem, because inertia means the affirmation of the work within a being. But the work done within any individual human being is the work of its total ancestry, right back into the infinite field of power. And doesn't that make it look rather difficult for us? No, it's not impossible. Because all we have to do to break it is break identification. Now, the only thing that makes any being identify with any situation is its own intention to modify it. Nothing else. Your own intention to modify it is the ground of your involvement. Now, if you remember that fact, and that you are willing to involve yourself in the concept of how to interfere, you've got three worlds there: the innermost world of the will, the inner world of the concept, the outer world of your temporal activity. We'll draw three circles for that. Your outermost, that's your physical body represented by Saturn, the time god. And then you have an inner world there. We'll put Jupiter on there for the concept. And then the innermost there, we'll put Venus for the will that drives, because it loves to do things. Quite simply, the will loves doing things. Now, providing you reflect back on will and tell yourself that what you are doing because you are willing to do it. You can rescue yourself from the concept and rescue yourself from the temporal expression of the concept. That is a reflexive act. You take the thing that you are involved in time, the temporal relationship, the time-matter relationship, and you remind yourself that you posited you in it in order to make a change, to interfere with it. And you did that by act of will. And when you do that, you go back to the concept into the will. And that's a number 9, isn't it? I reverse the 6 into a 9. 9 there means no. 6 means yes, and 9 means no. If I introvert my attention from the temporal world, contemplate the governing concept that I have, which I think is worth foisting upon the world, and then remember that I generated it by act of will, then I can let go of it. Because I attribute no reality to it except the reality that I have posited in it in order to interfere with the world. So, let's use a Muslim concept there to describe this process. It is called annihilation of self. You know that the number 6 is the symbol in the Bible of the beast, that means the national state, and of man, the individual. They both have the same number, 6. And they repeat the 6 3 times, 666, because you have here a precipitation into existence of thought, here a precipitation into feeling, here a precipitation into will. So you have 3 6s. Now, when you wind in that way, 6, and then another 6, and then another 6, you have posited from an absolute act of free will a governing concept, and then pressed into it to make a physical representation of it, and then you try to push that through time. Simply, we could say, we could represent it like this. And remember that diagram? 3 6s. One from the infinite comes in, meets the governing concept. There. by an act of will. The governing concept begins to extend itself in time and posits the material body and pushes that body through time. Now, the only way we can escape that is by annihilation of the definition that we gave to justify our interference. Omar has it about the annihilation's waste. Because when we undo this, this six, we come to a condition of nine. Nine, nine, nishtas. We undo the whole definitional structure. And then what do we find? We find that we are an infinite power. We have not ceased to be what we were. In the first instance, we were power. When we press inwards in this way, we posited a finite limiting concept by a finiting act of will, and then pushed that finiting concept through serial representation into a physical body in the time process. When we come out of it, we deliberately undo it. We reverse the process and we make a nine out of a six. Can anybody add that for me? What is nine and six? Nine plus six is what is it? 15. What's five and one? Six. They call that Kabbalistic reckoning up. The meaning of nine and six is six, because the nine is only an inversion of the same energy that posited itself. So that when you have annihilated yourself, you are still there as the author of the self-annihilation. And therefore there is an esoteric statement. After annihilation there is carrying on. It is still you, the same power, which having annihilated itself, and remember self is only a definition, having annihilated the definition of self, you are back again in the infinite field of power that made the initial definition of self. So then, if you will, you can make another definition, or you could stay out of definition. You could remain in the infinite. If you remain in the infinite, the Buddhist would call that nirvana. An Arab would call that fana. But if you realize that the power of your being was infinite before it made the finite definition, you recapture the infinity of your creativity in the act of self-annihilation. If we go to the great European mystics, we find they all say the same thing. Identically, they say, you must not the self, reduce the self to zero. The self, they mean, is the definitional finite self. You cannot negate the absolute power. What you can do is annihilate, not bring to zero, the definition that you made of your being. But remember that when you came in as a six, you came into a dotted situation, and all the purposes of total ancestry of the human race are in there, and they all, without exception, went their own way. So the moment you think of annihilating yourself, you cause a panic in the little aragons in your being, those little psychosomatic units. They don't want you to annihilate yourself because you, this is a horrible truth, one of the harsh realities, you are their doorway from infinity into temporal expression. Just imagine every one of those little dots is really a six. And only by getting into you as a human being can it gain full expression, full incarnation in the time-matter world. There is no other way. In the solar system, there is one planet, and one only where human beings live. This is it, the Earth. Once upon a time, symbolically, they said the Earth was the center of the solar system, in the Ptolemaic system. And then, somebody thought they were wrong. But they weren't wrong. What they meant was that the Earth occupies a central dynamic position. They didn't think it was static. But they taught that because they wanted people to focus on existence. But in fact, the Earth has a position in its orbit in the solar system, so that any planet other than the Earth is either too near the Sun, like Venus and Mercury, or too far from the Sun, like Mars and Jupiter and Saturn and all beyond. They're either too near, getting too much energy to assimilate, or too far away, insufficient energy. So it's only on the Earth, in its orbit, and this is where the error was made about the Ptolemaic interpretation, the Earth is not static. It has an orbit. It's the orbit that is central, not the static Earth, because the Earth isn't static. In that centrality of orbit is the necessity of the ground of the incarnation of man. Now, man is a very, very peculiar kind of being. He's not like the animals, in spite of the Darwinian evolutionists. He has a very peculiar faculty which we do not find in any animal, and that is the capacity for discussing with himself his own origin. He's actually capable of thinking, what is the origin of man? A lion dreaming after a heavy meal doesn't think, what is the origin of lions? But a man does. A snake doesn't think, what is the origin of snakes? But a man does. It is the human being and no other being that is destined, from the very nature of its medial position within the solar system in its central orbit, and the solar system itself has a similar position in relation to the galactic system that the Earth has in relation to the solar system. So that man, within the universe, is the only being through whom energies, those primary energy quanta, those ergons, can actually gain meaningful salvation. By salvation I mean washing away from all the rubbish that they don't want. By incarnating in the human being, they can gain a kind of expression, a kind of experience that they cannot gain in the life of the animal or the plant or the bacterium or the virus or whatever it is. It is only in the human being that these primordial psychosomatic entities, these ergons, can actually complete their evolution. Now, you all know that New Testament statement, the whole world groans and travails to be delivered from vanity. Because the whole world is fighting itself, fighting other beings, in order to find some kind of internal stability, some kind of peace, a center from which it can go forth to creative activity. But there is only one being in which this process can be carried to its full term, and that is a human being. So the human being represents exactly what is signified in that New Testament statement, the Son of Man. The totality of the human race is really one big being. Kabbalah calls it Adam Kadmon, the universal man. Same thing in the Arabian concept, there is a universal man. The same thing in alchemy, the same thing in the esoteric traditions of the West, there is a universal man. The totality of all conceivable human beings of past history, present history, and future history, in their totality, make up a cosmic human being. And we are little ergons inside this cosmic man. And we have exactly the same relationship to that cosmic man that every individual cell in our body has to us. The cells swim about in our body, and they go around looking for food, and some go around looking for enemy bacteria and gobbling them up, and they're all working very, very busily, and each one thinks it's working only for itself. A phagocyte that gobbles up some bacteria likes eating bacteria. That's its diet. It doesn't know that the bloodstream in which it's moving is the river of life for the human individual. And the same with every organ in the body. The liver works, the kidneys work, everything works, and thinks it's working for itself when it's really working for the individual human being. But the individual human being is likewise working for the cosmic man. Now, inertia means the amount of work put into a thing. Now, we have been evolving on this earth for a number of millions of years, during which time the purposes defined by acts of will of our ancestors, the concepts they have generated, the pressing through time to serialize and incarnate those processes, all those are in our bodies now. How does that feel? Can you feel them inside you? Can you feel the arguments are gone? You tell yourself something and a voice inside says, no, no, don't believe that. Why not? Because if you do, I cannot do what I want. We are full of little impulses, and those impulses each has its own purpose, and they have deliberately involved themselves in the life of man to get their own way. Now, this is called temptation in the religious systems. And temptation only means temporal presentation. A presentation in time. You think a certain thought. I'll ask you, will you please answer me truthfully as far as you can. Do you believe in God? Any of you?
Yes.
Do you mean it?
Yes.
Do you believe that he actually knows what you're doing?
Yes.
Do you really believe it? Do you believe that he can make you do an act that you would define as evil and destructive to you? Why didn't you say yes immediately?
Because
it's
nothing to do with free will.
Ha 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 ha. You see, there's a little egotistic thing that wants to have free will.
No, not wants,
it's got. Ah, see, the illusion. The illusion, it hasn't got anything. You see, here is one finger, and there is another finger. Now, where the two cross, is there a point of intersection?
Yes.
There isn't. I didn't draw a point of intersection, did I? I drew two lines. The forces that constitute your being, those forces are infinite. They intersect there, and you think where they intersect is an individual with free individual will. But it isn't.
Isn't it though?
No, it is not an entity at all. But you think it is. The reason you think it is because it is the intention of that infinite field, the short term for which is God, intends you to believe that, to make you work as if you were a free will being. Because it likes to see what free will beings do with free will which they think they've got. So then when you say my own free will, the word own means owed to the infinite. You know that the atom, for instance, is practically all space, don't you? And you know that an electron is made of little electrons, even smaller things. Yeah? And you know that if it exists, it's spinning. Yeah? And if it's spinning, it's hollow. So the whole thing is hollow. And that's the Buddhist idea of the pure void. But you think, because of tension in the feeling of your being, that you exist. It's only tension that makes you think. So I asked Deborah there to give you a push. Give her a push for me, Dad. Yeah. And doesn't something in your body try to resist it?
Yeah.
What?
Will standing?
No, inertia. The inworking already established of your total ancestry. Is this? But is that you? Is it? No, you don't, you see.
Now, when you recognize that it isn't you, and never was you, and never could be you, because the word you can strictly apply only to the infinite absolute. It doesn't really apply to you. It's a matter of grace. You're allowed to think that, to produce a local tension, to make you do some work on the basis of an illusory idea that you are an individual. Good. Because you are, aren't you? Because of this mysterious six. You're definitely tied up. Now, if anything is happening inside you at the moment in relation to your ideational behavior, your thinking, if it is as a result of what I'm saying to you, have you got control over all the ideational behavior? Then you must also be legion. Bound. Legion means bound, doesn't it? So there's an infinity of little beings inside there. And one little tiny group was taught when you were a little girl to say Greta. No, a little one, very little one. Very little. And it's so tiny you cling onto it, try to keep it in being. But the rest of your organism goes on breathing and digesting, desiring and so on. And all those things have nothing to do with that little ego that you name as Greta. They're quite independent and they've got no regard for it. They would use a little Greta structure and its conceit, which means conceptualization, which means grasping as an idea of being, which means grasping at the idea that you would like to interfere with the world. Yeah? You admit you would like to interfere with it. Yeah? But the rest of you is saying, it's a jolly good job this creature inside this organism has been trained by her parents to behave like a little monkey called Greta. Because through the inertia of her egotistic identification, she will tend to stay in existence. And as long as she stays in existence, there's a possibility that we'll get our own way. A little bit of titillation here, a bit of pleasure there, a bit of revenge here, and a bit of something there. All because Greta has been established as a permanent reference in the body. Now, how does that feel?
Pretty grim,
like a fairy tale.
Yeah.
Right. Now, it is precisely this erroneous idea that there is really a Greta being there, other than its simple verbal definitional rotatory system, precisely this erroneous idea has to be annihilated. Because you were, before you were named, before you had that greater concept, you were already a field of sentient power with enough intelligence, thought, feeling and will, to seize a fertilized ovum and appropriate it. Yes? You were living and breathing and kicking. You didn't ask your mother if you could kick, did you, when you kicked? No, I didn't. And consequently, when you get thrown into the world, it is the world's duty to impose on you a concept that will train you to be a citizen. Now, the first birth is called the birth from your mother in the physical body into the time-matter process. And that establishes that you're an egotistic, inefficient, incapable, erroneously structured being called civilized entity. Now, if you don't destroy the whole concept, you cannot enter the second birth, which is a birth to spirit that says, actually, I'm no such thing as divine. What I really am is a free spiritual will who has been tricked into a definition and is now about to untrick itself by taking whatever has been accepted as a definition and literally taking it to pieces by an analytical self-examination. Now, the whole of the inertia, that is the established motion pattern, of the civilization in which you were brought up, recorded in your protoplasm, is going to try to stop you doing it. So there is a real battle. It's called the good fight, isn't it? It's a good fight because the end of it is pre-intelligent response, as opposed to a bad fight, where you fight to retain egotistical illusions of separativity. So we see our position is fantastically, unbelievably complex. By means of a simple little name given to us in childhood and made to repeat certain social behaviour patterns, we have come to believe that we have a stable reference centre, and that that reference centre is the self. Now, even Carl Jung knew that that was not true. The self is not the same thing as the ego concept. But the ego concept has had so much energy pushed into it by the educational civilizing process that there is a tremendous amount of inertia. Because it isn't merely your mother and father telling you, is it? It's their mother and father, and their mother and father. All the way back to the original ancestor. But your original ancestor is God. And he's got all the power, not just some of it. So, coning in from the infinite to you, at the point of that cone, you sit there, and ordinarily in society you are made responsible at the tip of that cone there. That's said to be responsible. You are not taught that you're an infinite potential of intelligent, free responses, are you? Otherwise you might not go to school.
No.
I mean, children very often would prefer to be other than at school, wouldn't they? And if they weren't constrained physically, they wouldn't go. And then they would never become those beautifully civilized beings that establish the commodity production system that needs the raw materials to keep itself going. So when we come to fight inertias, what are we fighting? We are fighting literally infinite power. So if we identify with the finite ego structure of a being, we cannot win. Now if we can't win and there is a fight, what can we do? The answer is simple. Give in. That's a very simple solution. Give in. Say to the infinite absolute power, that's God. Okay, God, you posited the word God as shorthand for your vast, impossibly inconceivable, ineffable, sentient, magnificent, most exalted. You know, so oriental literature is like, you're not allowed to say God without saying, oh, most exalted, oh, most eternal and compassionate, God knows what. You have to say a whole paragraph before you're allowed to say, can I have a drink? And it takes time. And he has imposed on us an educational system that for economy's sake says, you say I as if you had one. So then I can say, Greta, and you jump. You are responsible. You're correct, replies. Oh, sir, believe me, I am a good pupil. I am not in any way responsible unless you, by your grace, impose responsibility upon me. Which, considering my non-existence, is hardly fair, you know. Now, if you've got that much savvy, you say, oh, millions of years I've been waiting for this pupil. He starts taking care of you. Do you know why? Because you are strictly nothing. And there's nothing he likes better than nothing. Because nothing absolutely is pure, free spirit. That's him. He's no thing. Now, the old Hebrew word there, which is borrowed into Arabic from the Old Testament and turned into another word, is Maslim, which became Muslim, which means quite simply, in a battle against infinite odds, down tools and offer to work for him. Yes? Now, it is said very simply in the Old Testament, there are lots of Muslim fellows who give in. Muhammad, when he was studying these thoughts, said, well, that's obviously the most sensible thing to do. We'll just simply modify it slightly. The Muslim, the one who accepts the will of God, he will win the battle. Why? Because strictly he has recognized his own non-existence. He has annihilated himself, and yet mysteriously he is still there by the will of the Absolute, who says, Greta, you know you don't exist. You're a phantasm of divine thought. But I like thinking about you, my dear. And as long as I like thinking about you, you're going to exist. And you say, yes, I know, Lord, of course. You give me the power to know what you're saying is perfectly true. So do something with me. Or don't. And I accept it. Now, it's like a very, very good potter. He gets a jolly good piece of clay with no odd bits of stone in it that might finish up on the end of a nose and ruin the model. He's very pleased when the clay has the right consistency of body and when it's malleable. And perhaps if you put it on the wheel, it responds beautifully. So it says very simply in the book, God says, if you love me sincerely, I will love you. Especially. I love you anyway because love means working for the development of potentialities of me. And I create you in order to work for you, with you, in you, through you, for my sake. Because everything is for God's sake, isn't it? The reason it's for God's sake is very simple. There isn't any other being other than God. So we have a very simple statement. Wherever there is being, it is only God being it. Wherever there is power, it is only God powering. Wherever there is sensitivity, it is God being sensitive. And this God is infinite, and the world is a finite structure. And this infinite God transcends absolutely its own creation, and it permeates it, and works through it, and particularly through the human individual who can comprehend the meaning of what God is saying to the human being. Namely, I have posited you as an instrument through which I can interfere with the world that I make. You are the special agent of God. Now, the inertia of your training, and particularly of materialistic training, is that you are just an evolute of senseless matter. The organism is supposed to be matter, and the matter is supposed to be atoms, and the atoms are supposed to be senseless, and yet by their accidental configurations in the form of the human being, through the actual configuration of what we call a nervous system, a consciousness mysteriously appears as a byproduct of excessive complication, but the whole thing is senseless. That's materialism. That you are an accidental gathering together of senseless particles. That's materialism.
But that concept
isn't there anything other than God. So it must be God who posited materialism. So materialism must have a function. It's function. Do you know what it is? Christ. That's dialectic. Make you materialistic and get you identified until you get in a real mess. Until you actually wish you weren't materialistic. Like Bernard Shaw being an atheist all his life until he turns 90 and then he suddenly thinks maybe he was wrong. He's not sure about the gate to which he's about to go, but he's going to be clobbered for being an idiot or what. So he thinks he'll hedge his bets a little bit. Now, materialism, that is the anti-God, is a definite amount of energy involved in existence. Mass inertia of the universe to nail us all down at the materialistic level to teach us that we're impotent. Aren't we at a lovely point at the moment with ICBM zip booms pointing from the USA to Russia and some of them on English soil and pointing everywhere, they're marvellous weapons. And if somebody got nervous and pressed a button, the human race might be annihilated. And you know that's actually causing serious thought in politicians' brains. The total idiocy of it But we can't get to divine consciousness without going to anti-divine consciousness. Now the sum total of the derived wisdom of the human race gathered together in cosmos from which it derives is the omega of the universe. The alpha is the infinite itself, and the omega is nothing but that alpha self-realized in the human being. You gather together the totality of all wisdoms, of hermeneutics, of art, religion, philosophy, science, gather them all together inside you and assert them to be the work of the infinite. And we are individual throughput points of the infinite. And our best thing is to say to the infinite, what next? Instead of perpetuate the illusion, I will do something. If you identify yourself as a finite and say, I will do something, I will enjoy myself, I will create havoc, I will hijack a plane, I will do this and that and the other, you can only do that if you are allowed to do it, to teach some silly ass a lesson. Like in the case of the hijackers, didn't they really upset the governments of the world? I mean, think just at the very moment when everything was coming under control, when the top jet set could jump into Concorde and have a quick cocktail in New York and fly over to Tokyo to kiss the girlfriend and back to London to sign the contract without interference. But the hijackers said, you could be in trouble. Now, everything that has happened, including the very worst thing that's ever happened to the human race, is a good thing because of the evolution of consciousness from facing the evil. So there are no absolute evils. Every evil is a good disguise. But funnily enough, there are absolute goods. So it's a funny kind of dialectical opposition in which the two opposing forces are not equal on the same plane, but it's like saying, I'm like that with my friend, you see, I'm the one underneath. We're friendly. Now, if you know that fact, and you know that you are nothing but a nothing, an illusion of an intersection point of forces, when the reality is infinite forces, and then you really listen inside, and I mean inside your head, between your ears, and say, what next? And you sincerely listen, you will say something relevant, right? Let's break off now, shall we? Yeah?